This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 185, Transparency. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a Friday. Wonderful blue skies, cooling weather. It almost feels like the beginning of fall. And I'm here with my fabulous friend and co-host, Michael Martin. Hey, Michael, how's it going?
Hey, I'm enjoying the fabulous fall weather and the start of basketball season. Woohoo!
Basketball?
No, basketball. In fact, just to celebrate this just a moment, I went ahead and pulled up the Curtis Blow Island Def Jam Music Group recording from 1984, where he sings the so-called basketball song.
Uh-huh. And, you know, if we had that clip on this end, we could put a 29-second clip in there.
Well, let's not do that. But, you know, big props to Mr. Blow for the super deluxe rap about basketball.
You got it. Got it.
Got it.
Love it. Love it. So we got some really, really interesting links this week for this show. We probably ought to like remove all references to time because all our episodes are truly evergreen. And we should just do them when they happen and whatever. So we've got some really interesting links this episode, being episode 185. The first one really is right in the wheelhouse of what we talk about, which is a link from TechCrunch on a ex-NASA and JPL engineer and a friend of his who is a Major League Baseball player.
For the Mets.
I don't care what team. I don't watch baseball.
I don't watch baseball either, but we should give the appropriate props for the appropriate team, you know.
Yeah, whatever. I don't care. Anyway, baseball. And they go in and do some research at a local carnival on all the different carnival games to let you understand the best odds of winning each game and what tricks might be in play with the game itself and what tips you might have to do better. I know you had a chance to watch the video. It's about 8 minutes long. What did you think?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. It was like a scam school video that said, hey, look, you've got three basic kind of games that you can play when you go to the state fair, which just closed here in our great state of North Carolina with over 1 million visitors over 10 days. That was just like, whoa. But if you want to get that big old bear and you need to win it for your sweetie, what game should you play in
Amazon
order to have the maximum chance? Well, that's what they concluded. The game you should play is Amazon because you'll spend less money. You'll actually get the thing that you ordered. But they don't have drones yet quite big enough to deliver a bear the size that you might want to get.
Yeah, yeah. The monetization aspect is not really a big surprise. And, you know, if you're going to play a game of chance, you shouldn't do it for, oh, I'm going to make a killing. If I win this thing, I'll make all this savings. No. Even if you win on the very first attempt of the game,
you still lose.
You still lose from a financial perspective. So, having said that.
Having said that, I mean, let's take the basketball example because that's what the first one they're showing, right? So, the idea is you got to sink a three-pointer, right? And they showed by measuring, you know, with like tape measure, that the basketball goal is a foot taller than the normal goal is. So if you're standing at the three-point line and shooting, you're going to be off, even if you are a solid shot, because the goal is higher, which, again, no big surprise. And the other fun fact here is that you're actually outside of that three-point line too, so that you are farther away and the goal is higher, so the trajectory and spin and everything else you put on the ball is not necessarily going to get you where you need to go, because that's part of the thing. And you know what? frankly, that is part of the game, right? If it were everything exactly the same in regulation, you know, if the milk bottles weren't weighted, if the balls were not ping pong balls or small
if
bouncy
balls. If the little rings
balls,
were a little bit larger than they are,
yeah,
so that
then they'd
it's
be giving
not like
out more
an
stuff.
Exact match that it has to fit.
It's a business, you know,
well,
come on.
It's not a business. Here's what it is. And
no,
this is,
you don't think it's a business?
This is what it is. It's entertainment. And as such, you have to, it's just like going to a casino. There are people who take it serious and try to make a business out of it, of going to the casino and they're going to win their vacation, blah, 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 blah. If you take it as pure entertainment and you say, I've got X amount of dollars that you want to have some fun with and spend, right? You're going to throw it overboard if you're on a casino cruise. You're going to, you know, set it on fire because the odds are always in favor of the house in any of these types of games. And if you take it as entertainment, play any of them. It doesn't really matter.
Well, yes and. So the yes and is, it is a business, right? Because it's an exchange of cash, right? And you get entertainment as a result of it. And you might get something else too.
It's a business for the carnival.
Yes.
For the player, it's entertainment.
Should be. Absolutely. Right. Because, you know, if you went to a bar and ordered a beer, you know, that is kind of the same thing. It's liquid entertainment. Depending on how many beers you have, it could be really entertaining.
Or really bad entertainment.
Or really bad entertainment. Right. So I mean, there are a couple of games that are very much skill based games. And if you are adept, such as the Mets player,
pitcher,
you could. So now we don't care about the
no, it's important that he's a pitcher because it's all about placement,
speed and rotation. You know, I knew the little trick about the basket game, but I still couldn't actually win that game where you try to toss the softball and it land in the peach basket.
Well,
and
it's not
out.
A softball. It's a wiffle ball.
Oh, was that a wiffle? No, that was
yes.
a wiffle ball, wasn't it?
That's a wiffle okay. ball, which is why it bounces so much.
Super deluxe bouncy ball. Yeah, or the milk jugs, you know, and the idea about them being weighted or they're metal at least. So
they're metal
you hit
and
them
heavier
right
than
spot.
Normal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's all these different little, again, if you understand the mechanics and the setup, mm-hmm. you can possibly improve your odds. But again, it's cheaper to go buy the toy.
Right, right. But the purpose is not the entertainment aspect is the winning of it, not the buying of it. Because if it were just the buying
again,
of it.
That's why it's entertainment.
Bingo. So out of curiosity, did you go to the state fair and did you play a game?
No.
Ah, okay.
Did you?
I went to the state fair and I played the game of, hey, let's try these North Carolina wines, which, you know, for the first time ever, there was a sort of a beer Oktoberfest-y kind of thing set up there where you nice. Can try North Carolina beers and wines. And I know a lot about North Carolina beers. And so I was like, okay, that's good. Let me try the wines. Yeah, unfortunately, they're all like super sweet and
North
not
Carolina
exactly
actually does
for.
Have some really good wines.
Yeah.
But
it's a $1 billion business yeah. here.
But going to like Muscadine wines and
yeah.
the white wines, not so much.
Nope, not so much. Yeah. And I mean, those are varietals that you don't get, you know, many other places in the world. So I understand that, but it wasn't what I was hoping for.
Yeah. Yeah.
So very cool. You know, to have a science-based view of fairs. You know, maybe one last note before we leave this topic. When I was in high school, we actually went to the state fair to conduct physics experiments, and that was part of our physics class. So big tip of the hat, you know, to our physics instructors for making science even that much more fun.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. Loved it. So this Saudi Arabia thing, you saw this, and I was like, whoa, talk about it.
Yeah. So this is really it was really neat at one level, and then there's a whole other social level that kind of was like, really? so here's the basic premise. There's a company, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. I'll find that in a second. But they make very lifelike robots, and they had created a robot called Sophia that looks, in theory, like Katharine Hepburn, a young Katharine Hepburn. The picture that they have on the link, she doesn't have any hair. So you can see the inner workings of the robotic face controls in the back of the skull. And then the name of the company is Hansen Robotics. Right. So they've created this robot, and one of their investors is the public investment fund of Saudi Arabia. And at the Future Investment Initiative, they showcased this robot, which is a human companion robot. So it's very lifelike is the idea, and it has built-in AI capabilities in order to have realistic conversations. They've got a really nice voice module in it, etc. And the Saudi government gave it citizenship. So
okay.
So that's the PR stunt. Here's this robot that now has full citizenship and was allowed to be seen in public without appropriate dress for the culture. That's the social aspect of the discussion. But what's really cool is if you actually click through to the Sophia website link that's in the article and go to Hansen Robotics, they actually have different videos of people interacting with it. The prime one on their main page is a Tonight Showcase with... Oh, God, I keep going blank on this guy's name, but he's one of the night show hosts from NBC.
Yep.
And I want to say Jimmy Kimmel, but it's not Jimmy Kimmel. It's the other one.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's the other one. So I was just taking a quick peek at it, and I was like, oh, I've passed. That's the Tonight Show host.
Yes. They also show snake robots and butterfly robots in that video. There's other videos on the site, including a video from like 2004 when they were just getting, no, 2005, where they were just getting started with a Albert Einstein video that they had created. So if you imagine, you know, the Disney World Hall of Presidents and other animatronics.
Well, it's just where this guy started, right? This Hansen.
And advanced them, you know, many decades. Lifelike. Maybe the part that still gets me is the eyes don't look right, and that's just because I focus on eyes, but smooth motion, lifelike facial features, good AI, really impressive. And in the one video, they even make a joke about this is how they're going to start taking over the world.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So... given the discussions we've had on robotics in the past, I thought this one was a cool one just to put in here and let people look at some of these videos. Very, very neat.
Yeah, super cool. I'm just taking a look at the Build article about a guy who had this robot in with him and his A7 prototype from Audi, kind of what they were doing. Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh, neat. All right. Well, so granting citizenship, interesting thing. Wonder if the robot will have to now pay taxes in Saudi Arabia.
Only if they are employed, I guess. So you found a couple of different articles all around the release this week of the JFK assassination records.
Yeah, I did. And it's kind of interesting to me because as we think about our theme of transparency, you know, like exposing how games operate, exposing notions of artificial intelligence, how that works together. This one really feels to me like a very interesting transparency exercise. And the article I found came from NPR and it was a call for citizen journalists or citizen reporters that they say. So the point being is with so many documents that have just been made public, they were declassified yesterday, I think it was. The request is hey, if you have the time and energy and you're reading stuff and you find an interesting nugget or a factoid or something, here, type it in this form. There's actually a Google form. And we'd love to have your insight on it. And if we use this as part of a story, we will give you credit. So
I love this.
Isn't that cool?
I love this idea. I clicked through the link actually to the archives that were released.
Yep.
And it's a gazillions of paper, right? I mean, it's 133 web pages with what? Let me see, is it 20 or 50 on a page? 85 to, yeah, with roughly 25, 35 to a page.
So I'm 35 times 135. Last one, because the very last document, that's document 6685, was redacted in full by the CIA. And here it is. This is it. It's now unclassified. Current status postponed in full.
And it's nicely, looks like a fax scan.
Yeah.
Almost illegible. So someone's going to take this data and process it through OCR, clean it up, and index it. That's what's going to happen.
Well, and that'll be a good first start, right?
Matter of fact, these are all PDFs. I can download them and put them in PDF Pro, which will OCR. I'm going to test that.
You should.
So,
I mean, this is actually pretty terrible. According to Lee Oswald's diary, Marina was a Kozomoy member. Interesting.
Okay.
So we could start working on this, you know, like later today. That'd be awesome.
Excellent.
Yeah. So speaking of transparency, and not that it's exactly the same kind of thing, but we're talking about Oswald. We're talking about Kennedy. Oswald was in Russia for a while. It looks like Facebook has reacted now to all the big question marks about, hey, who's buying ads on Facebook, by instituting a new policy.
Yes.
And you found this one from TechCrunch. This is talking about, hey, I'd like to know who bought this ad.
Yeah, and so there's been a lot of talk for a while now to understand. Right now on Facebook and other social media sites, they do very, very, very targeted advertising.
Very targeted?
You and I could get radically different ads on the exact same page based off of who we like, who we interact with, what do we post, blah, 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 right? And so the concern about political ads is that this may hide where the money is being spent, allowing people to not adhere to required reporting requirements for political ads. So as part of this, trying to address this in a social media space, Facebook has started an activity to do transparency of all the ads so that you can see not only who the ad is from, but many other details. And they're going to start rolling this out in the next month or so. They've been testing it.
In Canada first.
Yeah. They started a test in Canada, and they're going to roll it out, and it'll be really interesting to see. One of the things that I do, because I hate all those super targeted ads, is I go through and clear all my preferences about every other week. So I might like something and then find out, oh, that was actually not the opera group that I perform with's ad, as an example. It's actually an ad run by this other group that's related to this other thing that's actually an anti-opera group. But because they had a cool picture of Pavarotti, right?
An anti-opera group?
Yeah, I'm just making that up as an example.
I was going to say, sorry. It's just like, whoa, wait a minute. It's like, oh, who could be anti-opera, please?
Only the thrash metal fans.
Well, you know, opera tried to dethrone the metal, but yes, the metal.
But the metal won.
So Twitter apparently has gone through a similar exercise here too. There's another TechCrunch article linked from the first that is the same sort of thing, to really kind of issue the sponsored by, paid by, kind of like you see on television. And I remember hearing a little bit about this too, that the big question was like, well, how difficult is it after all, right? If you buy an ad in for television or for print, you know, you have to say, who is it? What is the group? Granted, the group could be Concerned Americans for Pandas in Southeast Asia. But you don't really know who they are, but they're concerned.
Yeah, they're concerned about something.
Something. So it'll be interesting to see how hard it is then to drill into and say, all right, so who bought this ad, and find the way to who bought it. And of course, once you do that, you're probably getting all kinds of lovely cookies on your machine after that too, wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Which will generate more,
which is more data, which allows you to do.
Oh, it's too much funny.
So love it. So very, very cool. Very cool story. And hopefully it will provide a much more positive results to some of the transparency around political ads and other ads on these social media platforms.
Yep. Yes, exactly.
So another short show. So we have one other link, maybe?
Yeah, we do. And this continues the AR version of transparency. And this is one that you found, and you've actually checked this out.
Yeah.
So I won't even set it up. Just jump right in. This is really super cool.
Yeah, so I belong to an iOS programmer Slack. And there's, you know, constant discussion around the latest APIs and capabilities on iOS and, you know, how do you use them, et cetera. And one of the big things that people are looking at now, obviously, is around ARKit. And the author of Magic Sudoku Solver has posted a couple of blog posts on why he did it and the latest one on how he did it. So this is a ARKit-based Sudoku puzzle solver. And it's 99 cents in the App Store, so not even a cup of coffee. And what you do is you take your iPhone or your iPad and you run the app and you point it at a Sudoku puzzle. It will first recognize the shape, i.e. a square with smaller squares inside of it. It mm-hmm. then recognizes the numbers in it, learning that how numbers are shaped and formed. And then it will solve the puzzle for you and overlay the answer to the puzzle in AR on the physical world so that it looks like the puzzle is solved.
It's complete, yeah.
And the whole thing takes about a second. And so I had to test this. I've got a Sudoku puzzle app that I like that I play on my iPad. And I started it on the iPad. I took the phone. I held it up to it. I was like, oh, that's the solve. And then you could literally solve the puzzle by looking at what the answer was right on top of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Amazing.
So what if?
Yes.
Ooh, what if you could do this? Let's just take the next logical example of solving a crossword the same way.
Should be. Well, then I think that's a little bit harder.
It's much harder because now you have to go through the same kind of, okay, the clues for filling in the crossword are going to always be a little more obtuse than the mathematical calculations that you could use to solve a Sudoku puzzle. But doable, isn't it?
Well, I mean, just look at Watson on Jeopardy, right? The clues in crossword puzzle, not a software puzzle.
Software puzzles.
The software clues in a crossword puzzle are kind of like Jeopardy questions.
Yes, exactly. They can be.
Exactly. So you end up with that type of model as a potential way of doing that, with additional data being the existing number of characters and possible other letters that fit in the answer from prior answers. I think that's a real solvable solution.
It is. So here's sort of your next step. If that's the case, now we're rapidly approaching the situation where if you need to take an exam for the Foreign Service or something, you're really going to have to keep a close eye on the Google Glasses and other sorts of interaction, because the same solve for a crossword puzzle could be used to solve for the answers in some certification test.
Yep.
Or that the answers that you need based upon the conditions, time, space, place, where you are, could be brought to the fore through a similar way, portrayed for you in a way that either lets you enter them directly or to speak and have them entered in for you through whatever interface you're working yourself through.
Exactly.
Oh, this, you know, it's not just a Sudoku puzzle and it's not just an iOS app. This is a gateway to really showing where the value of AR is going to explode in really moments of time, minimal time.
Exactly. This is why this is so cool. And like I said, the guy put an article together talking about, you know, what neural network training he used to understand numbers, how did he understand puzzles, some of the data that he had to reclassify based off of pre-existing models that had bad data in it by people not understanding what the questions were, et cetera. It's pretty amazing.
It's amazing. It's only the first of three articles, actually.
It's the second
of three.
The author
here is going to write a third one talking about the business aspects of this. So we'll have to come back and check that out, because I'm sure that it's Brad Dwyer on Twitter, BRADDWYER. What he's going to come up with next in his next article, I'm sure, is going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah. Very cool. Oh,
super cool. Well, that gets us about to the end of our time here today. I'm going to ask the question, expecting the answer no. Have you been playing any games, Michael?
No.
Yeah, me either. Well, that's just the fact of how things get every once in a while. So very well, again, this is cool. I'm really glad we had a chance to talk our way through this.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me encourage all of you to check us out, watch our feeds, send us stuff, and we'll be excited to bring them up here on our next episode of GamesAtWork.biz.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.